Okay, good. Someone
Mike
just joined.
Alma joined us. Alma joined us while you were turning the recorder on.
Okay.
So.
Hi, Alma. We put you had someone you were interested in making sure we put him on the participant list, and we did. Anyone who doesn't get post session notes can just email me at mfenu@aol.com, and there, we have two lists. We have the listserv, and we have the PLC participant list. Everyone. Listserv is a bigger list, but everyone who is on the PLC list gets not only the announcements and then also some post-session notes where we put all our websites and information in more detail. We always start these off with news from Washington. So, hello? Any news?
The only news from Joe this morning was just a reminder for everybody to be sure to get registered for the National Brownfields Training Conference to be held in Chicago, September 2 through 4, I believe. And there are some special sessions, the EJ session, the Environmental Caucus, Equitable Development. There are some special sessions that are going to be held. So if any of the grantees are going to be going to that, some of those extra sessions might be of interest. HMTRI, we're going to have a booth in the exhibit hall, so please stop by and see us, and we will be participating as well. And the only other news from Washington today was that they are anticipating releasing the FY16 RFP for job training in November. And as we all know, sometimes that date does need to be pushed back as the time gets closer. But right now, that's what they're anticipating is November for the 2016 grants for job training. The other reminder, which is not from headquarters, it's from us. Mike mentioned the all grantee meeting coming up. That is on August 19th and 20th. And what that is an annual gathering of all the grantees, current grantees, past grantees, prospective grantees, where we bring everybody together with EPA headquarters and regional staff to network and learn from each other. So PLC members are also invited to attend so that you can network and learn from the people that are doing the job. This year's meeting, as Mike mentioned, is going to be a little bit different than it's been in past years. We are doing, instead of doing small group sessions on broad topics, we've kind of narrowed those down a little bit so that it's going to be a little more specific. For example, we have one of the grantees is going to be doing a presentation on working with WIBS, another how to hit the ground running as soon as you get a grant, Unions 101, placement and working with employers, that type of thing. And once those specific sessions are done, then all of the grantees are going to be doing a brief overview of their program also in small group sessions. So by the end of the meeting, all of the current grantees will have presented either a program overview or a topic. The only grantees that I did not pick on this year were the brand new ones that just got funded in 2015 who have not been doing this in the past. Those are the only ones that I didn't pick on this year. So if you have not registered for the grantee meeting and you do plan to attend, the registration date for the hotel, which we kind of follow just because so that there's not all these different dates out there, is July 29th. So you need to get registered and get your hotel reservation made by that date. I think that's it for me, Mike.
Okay. If you're on a speakerphone, microphones have gotten really sensitive. So if you're on
loud.
A speakerphone or whatever, you might want to mute. We like to keep them open so people can talk. If they have a question, just blurt it out. And that's fine. It's very, very informal. But if you do have a speakerphone, you may want to mute so we don't pick up your side conversations or rustling of papers and things like that. Thanks, Glow. I'm going to put some other announcements In the post-session notes, there's a Georgia Environmental Conference that's August 26th. The big thing that's happening between now and September are basically meetings. They're summer meetings. Our meeting that'll be occurring on the 18th through the 21st, that includes the transportation on both sides, the meetings 19th and 20th. And then you've got the Brownfields meeting. Some states are having their own environmental conferences, and the Georgia conference is a 26th to the 28th. It's a 10th annual conference. It's mostly about technical issues, but the one thing about these conferences is it's a great place to meet employers. So I'll put them in the notes about this if you wanted to, if you're in the area. You might even just want to go to the website and find out who the sponsors are, because they're usually environmental firms, and it's a great place to expand your Rolodex in terms of potential national employers. In the case of this one, there's a banner and it's got all of the prime sponsors. These are basically people who are doing the work. So you might look in your state and see if your state's going to have one. The Brownfields Florida Environmental Conference is probably the biggest one. They have 400 employers and members, and it's a great place to go if you're in the Southeast. There's other states that have their own. Again, there's not so much on workforce development, but there's a lot about employment opportunities and employers. Also, another note in terms of September, and I'll put this again in the post-session notes, is that there are things going on. People are attaching things to the workshop, to the Brownfields workshop. It's formally from the conference is formally from Tuesday till Friday. The power days are basically Wednesday and Thursday. If you can only go 2 days, I would certainly go Wednesday. Registration starts at 7:30, and Thursday, that's when all the sessions are. And we're going to have a session on job training. There's not as many this year as there have been in the past, but we're going to have a booth, as Glo said. Tuesday and a half of Friday, things start to wind down on Friday. But the thing about it is OAI is also going to have an open house, and they're right around the corner from where the meeting's going to be, and they're going to do some demonstrations and invite people. There's also going to be something going on the 1st, which I'll put in there. It's Dion Ferris, who's actually going to present at the next PLC on the 29th. Dion is with the Brownfields Equitable Development organization, and they're going to have a workshop. It's a one-day workshop on September 1st. And it's a full-fledged workshop. It's going to go from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the reason I'm mentioning it is if you're planning your transportation early and you're figuring you're going to get there to start on Tuesday, you may want to look at her workshop and what they're putting on. There's going to be a lot on workforce development, equitable development, EJ, but that's going to be on the 1st. So if you make your non-cancelable plane reservations, you may want to rethink that, or at least look and see if you want to go in on to make this conference a separate workshop. It's connected. They're going to attach it. It's not part of Brownfields, but they figure people will be there, so they are having it that on the 1st. So just a word of caution if you're planning your arrangements. But that's going to be, you know, if you go to the whole thing, it's a full week, so it's quite an event. Now, of course, the difference for those of you who have been to both these is the September conference is all about everything in Brownfields. And, of course, our workshop in August, in a couple of weeks, is strictly about setting up job training and working with job training. And it's really the only people who are invited are EPA people, professional learning community, PLC participants, and grantees, past grantees who are alumni who may not even be funded anymore, and current grantees. And that's 100% dedicated for 2 days to environmental job training. But we'll put all of these things in the post-session notes. I want to get to Jessica and what she's going to tell us about Detroit. Detroit's an interesting place. We all know about the problems they've had, but Detroit has done amazing things. I mean, faced with dawning unemployment and Flight. They have instituted many programs, and they seem to be working very well with integrating their government organizations with their nonprofit organizations. They have their WIB, which is Detroit Employment Solutions, and they're working with about 30,000 job seekers, and they've got 1,700 businesses around the state, around the Detroit area. They've got 30 service centers all around. And what's neat about what Detroit's doing, Jessica and Lorena, and they're all working in different parts of government, but they're able to coordinate and make this a great program. So, Jessica, with that, I'm going to turn it over to you and tell us a little bit about your program.
Sure. Okay, so as stated, we are Detroit Employment Solutions Corporation. We are the subcontractor for the City of Detroit Building Safety, Engineering, and Environmental Department. So when we first engaged in this endeavor, we came onto the application as a partner to provide these services for the grant. So what Detroit Employment Solutions does is we are the administrative and fiscal arm for our local Workforce Investment Board. We provide all the activities under Workforce Investment Act, or now it's known as WIOA, to City of Detroit residents. And so for this program that we have, we've coined the Detroit Environmental Employment Program, known as DEEP. So we always coin it as DEEP, so whenever we talk about it, that's the acronym that we use. But what we are targeting doing in this application is we will train 60 City of Detroit residents and give them the basic skills they need to get into a field, environmental field. So we give them 40 hours of work readiness, which we provide as Detroit Employment Solutions Corporation. We also give them a 40-hour HAZWOPER course, a 40-hour asbestos abatement at a supervisor level. They get the National Incident Management System training, as well as CPR. And so those are the trainings that we facilitate for the individuals interested in the program. With that, we also give them support while they're in training. So if they need bus tickets or any gas cars or any transportation support, we also provide them some supportive services. So I think the biggest thing, though, is that in doing this is that the value of partnerships. So us partnering with the city has been a huge help, because as we have developed our marketing materials for this program, the city has been able to market the program. So for recruitment has been really, really easy, because once you start putting the information out there, people really flock to it, especially since, you know, Detroit is I don't want to say that we're economically depressed, but it is somewhat that way. You know, we have a high unemployment rate, so people are really looking for training opportunities so that they can go to work and provide for their families. So once you put the information out there, our phones are ringing. We also do cold calling. We also do robocalling. So we have a list of approximately about 30,000 people that we see on average at any given point. And when they come through our doors, we do get contact information for them. So we get their phone numbers, their email addresses. And so when we have these type of programs, we will use a robocall to call the participants and let them know that we have this great opportunity for them, and they can come in and get registered with our system. And if they're interested and meet the qualifications, then we can go ahead and start them into the program. We also do email blasts to engage customers as well. So we're capable of sending up to 1,500 email blasts per day. So we've done that. So you do 1,500 email blasts per day for a week. You know, we're reaching a pretty large population there. So filling up the first cohort was pretty easy. And let me just back up. When we did the contract with the city, we agreed to training 60 individuals over the course of 3 years, and then also getting those individuals employed. And part of that, we also decided we would have advisory council meetings once every quarter. Well, we had our first advisory council meeting in January of this year. We had some employers to come to the table. We had other city departments at the table. Obviously, Building and Safety were there. Detroit Employment Solutions was there. And we really discussed what the need and what the demand would be for environmental workers. If you look up any newspaper, there's quite a bit of construction and development going on around Detroit. We have the M1 rail We have District Detroit, which is the new hockey stadium. So there's quite a bit of movement in the downtown and Detroit area. So when we engaged with the employers, they had a really high demand or high need for environmental workers, mainly asbestos removal workers. So because of that, we did decide to go ahead and accelerate the program a little bit. And instead of doing one cohort every quarter, we did two cohorts in one quarter. So again, we agreed to doing 60 people. We are at 33 people who have been trained for the program so far. They all have received their asbestos license from the state of Michigan. They have their hazard whopper certificate, their CPR card, because they're really ready to go to work. And another thing that we do is we connect them to employers. We have five employers that we have identified who have that need in the community. So we sit our participants down to do the panel interview with our program participants so that they can kind of see where they fit in best. And most of the employers have taken on or committed to take on those participants. We also have, from Detroit Employment Solutions standpoint, we have our own business service division. And because of all the development, we also have a huge need for asbestos environmental workers. So we're working with those employers as well. So in total, we probably have a good 12 to 13 employers who are really looking for people who could come in there and remove asbestos or lead and abate those properties. So the program has really been going well. We have learned some things, particularly when we send off the asbestos license to the state of Michigan, is that it's not a quick process. We were expecting the certificates to come back, you know, in about a week or so. It's been taking the state of Michigan about 3 to 4 weeks to send those back. So that delays the person's ability to start on the job. So that's been something that we've learned. So we don't schedule our interviews right at the end of training. We kind of wait a week or so just so that the state of Michigan get those asbestos license and start processing them, processing the applications. And once the applications are processed, most likely when they get ready for their interview, they have that card in hand so that they can go ahead and get right into work. Let's see, what other learning lessons have we learned? We do customer surveys. So at the end of each cohort so far, we've done them to see how was the program, what things could we improve, how did you like it overall. And so far, we had a 4.8 out of a 5-point scale for training. With all of our participants who've completed. So that's good. We're excited about that. Overall, though, the customers have really, really expressed their gratitude for the program, and they're really looking forward to it. So far, we have job offers from ranging from, what, $11 an hour upwards to the highest so far is $18 an hour. So that's pretty good. I think that's pretty much it. We're really focused heavily on recruitment. We did the email blast, the robocalling. And really getting them customers engaged into the program. So far, it's a pretty straightforward program once you kind of get rolling and you kind of learn the things as you go along. You really kind of start to improve your program based off of the lessons that you learned from each previous cohort. So,
you know, Jessica, you're in your first year.
Yes.
And for those of you who are either new or prospective, that first year is the toughest year because no one knows about your program.
Right.
Your employers don't know about your program, your reputation, even on the people who want to get into the program. There's a high likelihood as you go on here, you're going to get swamped with applicants who want to join. And
right.
How do you filter them down?
Well, that's where we are right now. Right now we have a wait list of individuals who are waiting to begin the next cohort. So what we really do is that for assessment, we give everyone who's interested an assessment to kind of really see that you really want to do this. So when we put out our flyers, it asks if you're over 18, if you can lift over 25 pounds, you know. And once they come into the center, we're really asking those forensic questions. Are you willing to work outside in any conditions? Are you willing to work outside or in confined spaces? Some people say, you know, no, that's not quite what I envision, and they'll fall off themselves. But if those people who are still interested at that point, we will go ahead and give them an interest survey just to kind of see that their interest really lies in this program. So if you tell me that you're interested in this program and then you take an assessment and you're really more IT focused, then this may not be the best fit for you. And then we also do another assessment. We do a math and reading assessment, and we ask for people that have at least a sixth grade level for math and reading to be able to go into this program. just because that's a, you know, it's a quick assessment. It's a basic sixth grade math and reading. It's pretty basic just to get into construction or to this environmental field. That's a good screening criteria. So based off the assessments that we use, people either screen out themselves naturally just by the questions that we ask. And for those who are still interested and meet all the other criteria, they have been added to a wait list so they can go ahead and be vetted through the program. So far, our next class of 20 is filled up. So as you said, the demand, once people hear about it and the demand starts coming in, you will start to get those customers. Like, we don't have to even recruit as hard as we did in the beginning because of the publication of the marketing material. So people are call us before we even have to engage the community.
Sometimes it turns out, and OAI has done a lot of work on this, but they're a very mature program, and they have now tryouts, which we're going to demonstrate at the all-grantee meeting. But it sounds a little callous, but the harder it is to get into the program, they find their retention rate goes up because people, if they're willing to jump through hoops and go to an awareness night and an orientation night and application night, they find that they start with 100 or 200, and then people don't want to fill out the application or they don't want to come to the awareness night. Then they got to go through an interview process. And we've got in California, they actually go to the families' homes and interview them at home to see if there are constraints that are going to make them drop out, like child care issues, what kind of, do they have some legal issues that have to be straightened out? And they can work with them, but at least they find that out. How is your retention rate? Are you finding that first cohort difficult to keep people in, or are you finding?
Well, our first cohort ended the first week of May. The second week of May. And again, that's where that learning lesson came in. Once we sent out those asbestos cards, it took the state almost 4 weeks to send them back out.
Wow.
And so they have started, so some of their start dates are just starting, so they're just getting into those jobs yet right now. So as they, you know, get on the job for a couple of weeks, we will start to engage and make sure that as they're working, that if they need any support, that they need work boots or any tools, gas cards, any supports while they're engaged in employment, we can provide that to them. So we do have a follow-up and retention team that works heavily with those individuals.
What I like about what Detroit does, and those of you who are closely associated with the Workforce Investment Board, you're able to bring in a whole lot of resources just automatically. And WIBS are so used to this. One Stops and WIBS, they know all about it. Tacoma was, I thought, and they didn't get refunded this year, but they did such an excellent job, and you're doing the same thing. They screen every participant that comes in is pretty much automatically screened. Do you qualify for work boots? Do you qualify, in your case, bus transportation? Now, none of those are covered by the EPA funding. The life skills training that you provided is automatic, but it's not provided by the EPA funding. So you're bringing to the table unconsciously, and you're just part of this, that all of these extra leverage services you're providing your participants, where if you're a grantee and you're trying to start this and you don't have that benefit of that WIB, you've got to find that from somewhere else. And those are that's a major amount of leverage resources that your organization's providing to this, which is great. It's a great opportunity.
I would agree with that as well. You know, just given the landscape of wherever any of the potential grantees are, a lot of our customers, one of the biggest barriers is transportation. Mm-hmm. It's not finding a job, it's getting to and from employment. So we do want to make sure that that's no longer a barrier. So to the extent that we can remove or remediate as many barriers as possible, we try to. Obviously, you know, we're like everyone else, we don't have a huge budget, but, you know, we try to make our budget work the best way that we can, just to make sure that people really have a real chance at success.
Yeah. Do you have problems with or issues with child care where they need child assistance?
Well, not for this program. We haven't encountered anyone who's had that particular issue in this program, but that is an issue for some of our other ones, but not for this one so far.
Can your WIB provide child care, or is that something?
We don't provide child care directly, but we do have partner organizations that provide assistance. We have a partner network of over 250 community partners. So we will reach out to our community partners to see who can help with child care assistance. Or if there's an issue with housing or utilities, we will reach out to those community partners to get those issues removed.
Which is another great advantage of, again, being connected to a WIB that might be connected to other programs. The nice thing about the workforce-type investment boards is they've been around for a long time, and they already have established partnerships, and they know who in the community, and it might not even be a governmental organization. It might be a faith-based organization that could provide some resources or a community organization that could provide resources that you might not be familiar with. So that's why we really suggest, and not all grantees are working with WIBs. They're able to do all this without that. It really depends. Now, the other thing about Jessica's program is that you're in a heavily urbanized area, and those of you, when you're in Montana, you may be in a place where you're not going to have 10,000 people looking for jobs. You might have a much smaller Nye County. You're going to have very few, and so your recruiting process is going to be a little more difficult, and you're going to have your classroom disparities are going to be greater because you're going to have people who haven't been to school for 20, 30 years, and you've got people who have just gotten out of school and can't get jobs. So you're going to have a lot more disparity in your classroom, which makes your training more difficult. The other thing I like about what you've done, Jessica, in Detroit is it sounds like you didn't have preconceived notions until you talked to your employers, and they were telling you, we need asbestos and lead. And that got you on the track, didn't it?
Jessica, this is Alma. How did you get all those employers interested in attending that first meeting?
Sure.
Because it's a key to your success is having that many employers.
Sure. So when the city first engaged, they reached out to, they have a building authority advisory meeting that they attend. And so when they attended that, they kind of start engaging with some of those employers who are at the table, because most of the time, by them being a city department and working in that entity, that you have contractors who are interested in doing work with the city. So you kind of start getting those connections with those employers. So
What was it? I didn't understand. Already an advisory meeting for something?
They have a building authority meeting that meets biweekly.
Okay,
and in the building authority meeting, they will get contractors and different companies who are interested in doing work with the city. They attend those meetings just to get more information about what projects are on the city's radar.
Okay.
And so in those meetings, they were able to connect with some of those employers. But for our end, for Detroit Employment Solutions, we also have a business service division that goes out to the community and connects with employers based on different sectors. So we have a skilled trade sector business service rep who goes out and talks to any company that is in skilled trade. So any construction contractors, any unions, anybody who's in that capacity, they go out and reach out to them and see if they have any needs. And one of the big selling points to working with the local workforce board is that we can pretty much offer employers those same things that they will be spending money for in terms of recruitment and placement and soft interviewing. We can do all that for the employer, so that's helped us as a marketing tool when engaging with employers.
Okay, great. So then that got onto your advisory meeting, and then you got their input on your program.
The advisory meeting, they were willing to buy into the program, willing to hire from the program. We also got them to come out and do an orientation. So before each cohort, we have an orientation, and we invite the employers to come out so they can talk directly to the customers and let them know we really do have employers and there really is demand for this type of work, and here's what you can expect the day to look like.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
No problem.
I remember Lorena gave us an instance. She went to it was serendipity. She went to a meeting and that she wasn't invited to, and there was, because you all are in city government and you handle it through buildings and engineering and environment, and they were talking about all the deconstruction going on in town and all the construction and lack of manpower, and so the heck, we can provide you with those people. And they said, are you kidding? You could provide us with people? with the specimens. You're talking a couple thousand dollars worth of certifications, and you can provide us with those people? Sure. Well, all of a sudden, you know, you're going from one cohort to two or three cohorts in a year, which is incredible, which again shows that importance of somehow getting into those meetings where the people who are doing the work are there. Not everyone has that luxury of being, I think because you're connected with building and engineering in your partnership, you're able to access those people, those contractors who are actually going to be doing the work, which is really a great connection that you've got.
I agree.
Anyone have any questions of Jessica? They're doing a great program, and again, it's an interesting lesson for other grantees. Now, there might be other parts of the country where there is no lead, so they're not, and there may not be no asbestos because it's a newer community down here in Raleigh. We don't have those kind of issues. We've got other issues. So you might be, you know, you might be in Montana. You might have lead issues. You might have mining issues. There are other parts of the country. It might be mold or pesticides. Might be pest control. So it really depends on that, not only on the labor market assessment, but on your connections that you make. And I remember a long time ago in East Palo Alto, it just so happened that they were involved. Somehow they ran into a tank manufacturer who said, we'll hire everyone you could graduate. We need people with the confined space. And in that case, I believe it was asbestos removal. And they just started focusing their program on the needs of the local employers. That's why we try not to say there's one size fits all, a cookie cutter approach, because every community might be different. And it may not only be the community, but it may be you may have an employer in town who's supplying people nationally. They might need HAZWOP, and these people may be traveling. Your students may be traveling to all parts of the country. So it really is highly dependent on how you make up those relationships. Very important. Anyone want to ask anything of Detroit, of what they're doing? And, of course, you all will be at the annual meeting, our annual grantee meeting, and we'll be talking some more about all of these issues, the transportation, personnel, the legal issues, child care, and the such, and we'll put these in the post-session notes. Meanwhile, if you have any questions, hopefully, Jessica, we could give you a call or email you if we have any questions. And go from there. Well, thank you very much. We try to keep these calls down to 30 minutes so it doesn't take a lot of time out of people's day. So we'll be talking to you all on the 29th. We're going to have Dion Ferris, and we'll be talking about also environmental justice, and also it's getting involved in the mayor's office, working with governmental organizations, and also how that ties into environmental justice. So thanks, everybody, for calling in, and we'll talk to you soon, and we'll send out some post-session notes.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.